It's 107.7 The Bone, baby Huey Chasta and Jimbo here in Chasta. I think it only seems fitting for our next guest. Jimbo has to do a personalized introduction.
He has to.
Have to. I'm so excited because once again, we're welcoming a man who is an undisputed champion in the wrestling ring, in the written word. He's a best-selling author, and he truly is the Ayatollah of rock and rolla with Fozzy. We have Chris Jericho back on with us. We're marking out. Man,
God, it sounds like you're having an aneurysm, man. You okay?
That's actually my biggest fear. Whenever I go on WebMD, that's what it always says that's happening to me. So you're jumping right into my nightmare.
You got to stay away from WebMD, man. It's the worst if you're a hypochondriac.
Good to know.
That is true.
Well, Chris, listen, thank you so much for making the time today. We really appreciate it. So it's a big night for Fozzy. Tonight, they're going to be playing Slim's here in San Francisco. It's going to be a powerhouse show. So get your tickets right now at slimspresents.com. And, of course, get Fozzy's latest record, Judas. We really love the album, Chris. Like, here we've been just headbanging to it and all. And Chas has specifically been in love with the album.
I really have. Now, Chris, I got to, before we even get too far into the interview, I have to do a little story for you. I have to tell you a story. So these guys are so, they have the flop sweats over you right now. They are such Chris Jericho fans.
Jerichoholics.
From your wrestling days, obviously. But I love you from Fozzy. I'm a big Fozzy fan. So we interviewed you at the Aftershock Festival last fall. And I don't know if you remember this at all, but we took a picture. We took a picture after our interview, and I was standing next to you, and the guys were on either side. Baby Huey literally grabbed me and physically moved me out of the way so that he and Jimbo could sandwich you. And you know what these guys did? They actually took it a step further when they put, you know, because you were obviously the profile picture on all their social media accounts. They
really?
Actually, they cropped my ass out, Chris Jericho. Cropped me out.
Well, I apologize, Sutton. I promise next time we take a picture, I'll cross Baby Huey and Jimbo.
Yes!
I'll take a picture with a pretty girl anytime.
Thank you.
I was afraid you'd say that.
You actually said that.
Neither one of them.
That day. So here's the deal. I want like a prom style photo with you, and I want them in the back just looking super jealous that they're not getting their prom style photo with you instead I am. So that's, we're going to make that happen one day.
I'll even buy you a croissant.
I love it. All right. So let's talk about this album, Judas, because I am a huge fan. My 1.5-year-old and I were totally rocking out last night. It really has taken you guys to the next level. I've heard you say that. How do you feel like this sort of catapulted Fozzy into the next realm of rock and roll?
Yeah, it's like we're a 17-year overnight sensation.
Right? That's exactly
really
right.
Crazy. I mean, we've had some successful songs before, but Judas just took things right to a different place. He said the elusive hit single. And it's funny when you mention your 1.5-year-old. Little kids love Judas as well. I get so many videos on Twitter of little kids watching the video and listening to the song. So whatever reason it is, it's like a modern-day Yellow Submarine.
It totally is.
It's been just very accessible. People really dig it, and I would love to analyze it and tell you the reason why. I don't know the reason why, and it doesn't really matter. We're just taking advantage of this great success that we're having. Touring the States, touring Europe. We just came back from Germany and Denmark and all these great places. And everywhere we go, the crowds are packed, sold out or close to it. We just did Las Vegas 2 nights ago, sold that out. We did the Whiskey in Los Angeles the night before that, sold that out.
Nice.
So it's a really cool time for us, and it's a lot of fun and very gratifying for us at this point.
That's awesome. So, Chris, can you tell us more about just the overall concept and inspirations for this new album?
Well, I mean, I think the idea was to do a record kind of like Hysteria or Kick by NXS or Appetite for Destruction. And what I mean by that is if radio wanted 5 singles, we wanted to do a record that could have 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 singles. We really wanted to make this an album where every song was A+. And really worked hard on it. It took us about 1.5 years to do the record. And that's why it was 11 songs. We were working originally on 12. The 12th one wasn't cutting it, we wanted to do, like I said, every song on this record could be a hit is what we wanted to do. And it's kind of what happened. I mean, the original idea for Judas to be the first single was a little bit of an issue at first. There was 3 or 4 candidates with the record company and us that were kind of up for grabs to be the first single. Judas was number 1, Painless was number 2, there's 3 or 4 others in the the chamber locked and loaded, ready to go. So we just really put a lot of time and effort into making this very hooky and melodic, but still very heavy and groovy, which is what Fozzy's known for.
Chris, you've done some badass music videos already for this album. First, you know, and when we last actually spoke to you up at Aftershock in Sacramento, we were talking about the music video for Judas. And poor Chasta here, she had to deal with her clown phobia right off the bat. And
yes.
now we get this another
and
awesome
I have
video.
Another one? I know.
So what's the deal with the clowns? And just can you tell us about the music video for Painless?
Well, the idea for Painless was to do a sequel to Judas. And I hadn't seen a sequel for a music video, I think, in 30 years since Twisted Sister, We're Not Going to Take It, and I Want to Rock. So yeah. Judas was filmed at half speed, which means when you play it back, it's very erratic and jumpy and quirky and weird. And Painless, we filmed it at double speed, which means it took like 2 minutes to run through it. So it's very slow when you play it back at normal speed, almost like underwater type of vibe. And the idea is, have you ever seen The Shining, when Jack starts losing it and he's kind of in two different dimensions? He's in the ghost world and he's in the real world. Mm-hmm. We wanted that type of vibe where there's two different kind of dimensions at the same time, same place, and neither one is interacting with the other. And that's why we have the weird clowns and the rabbit with the balloons and the chicks breathing fire and just all that different stuff. Because we shot them both in one take as well. So
wow.
It's very much like a Martin Scorsese, Goodfellas type vibe where it's one continuous take. And if you watch Judas and Painless, you'll see that. So, like I said, we wanted to do something cool, not just the typical live concert footage. And we took a chance with it, and both of them have been huge successes. I mean, Painless did a million views in less than a month. And I think Judas is already at almost 17 million. It just won't die. It just keeps going and going and going. So, in this day and age, as you know, having that video on YouTube is so important, and having people watch it and get into it really kind of made Judas the cool song of the moment, and it's doing the same thing for Painless as well.
Could you just personally do me a solid for your next video and not include a clown? I would love that, because I love your music. I love watching the videos, but that clown scares the you-know-what out of me.
They were happy clowns. Don't worry about it.
There's no such thing.
I don't know if that's working for her, but I agree with you. I mean, those very videos happy. Really are super awesome, so very, very well done. I do want to touch on a story you told in your book, No is a Four-Letter Word, because it was really... it was such a funny story. It was about you were on tour with Fozzy, and Saxon got jealous over chicken. Can you give us sort of the Reader's Digest version of that story?
Chicken. We made a song. Where's my chicken? I love chicken. I want chicken. Digga, digga, digga. We toured with Saxon, who's British heavy metal legends. And the singer, Biff, always got mad because we had a rotisserie chicken in our dressing room every show. And it's on our rider. You know, every band has a rider where they kind of explain the stuff that they want to have in the dressing room every night, whether it's fruit, vegetables, and, you know, alcohol, whatever. I always make sure there's a chicken on the rider because that way I know there's going to be at least one good meal a day. And Biff was very concerned about this. Why does the support band have a chicken? And I have a chicken. And I was like, Biff, you've been touring since the 1800s. You should know. If you want a chicken, just put it on the rider and have a chicken. So he was really always very angry that we had chickens and he didn't. So then we started to leave chicken in his dressing room and put chicken in his pocket of his clothes, and then he got five silver platters and five chickens, and when they did, they were doing their seminal song Wheels of Steel, and we just walked on stage with the chickens on a silver platter and fed them white meat and dark meat during the sing-along for their most popular tune.
That's
so very cool.
Awesome.
Do you still antagonize him with it?
Yeah, I just had him on my podcast, and he remembers it a completely different way. I was mad about the chickens, but I was like, Biff, you have Alzheimer's now. You don't know what you're talking about. But, we had a great time with those guys. And that's one thing when you're on the road, you have to make sure that you have fun, because if not, it'll drive you crazy. The monotony of being on the bus every day and sitting backstage in venues, et cetera, et cetera. You have to have fun with what you're doing. And if you can do that, it makes the tour go by a lot quicker and you have a much better experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to that end, we love asking, wrestlers about their favorite road stories. I mean, you're a wrestler and a rock star. Can you share maybe a favorite funny story from either being on tour with Fozzy or from the road in wrestling?
Well, like I said, I mean, I have 4 books worth of funny stories. So if you want them, you can go read them right there. But it's just a day by day thing. Something funny happens every day. And a lot of it is also just being in the moment and being around with the guys. And it's just, like I said, we've worked really hard to put together a great band, not just on stage, but off stage, because it's so important. Obviously, the hour and a half on stage, you have to have great musicians and great showmen. But it's the other 22 and a half hours of the day where you really figure out if you actually like these people or not. And if you don't, it makes things really, really tedious and really bad. If you have, and it includes the crew as well, if everybody gets along and everybody's fun, it just makes it a great experience, like I said. So everybody in the band, from the actual musicians to the crew, all have to have a great sense of humor, all have to be cool people, or they don't last very long in our organization.
Wow, it's really cool hearing. So, Chris, I mean, just for me personally, I love listening to Judas front to back. I just love how catchy every song is, how heavy every song is. But so with that said, I was just kind of curious of just the whole writing process for a Fozzy song. Who actually writes the music and the lyrics? And then for you personally, how do you find the time to write and record an album, especially with your most recent run with the WWE?
Well, I mean, Fozzy's the priority, you know, and I just go to the WWE when we're in between album cycles. And recording a record for a singer is really easy. I just come in and I do my, 14 days of singing, and then I'm done. I don't have to worry about the mixing and the mastering and the producing and all other stuff. So it doesn't take a long time. And as far as writing goes, we decided to work with a producer named Johnny Andrews on this record. And Rich and I decided, like, he has the final say. No matter what we want to do, Johnny's in charge. So in the past, I wrote all the lyrics for Fozzy. And for this record, I sent in all my lyric ideas, and he went, yeah, we're not using any of these. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
And why is that? And he's like, because they're not what I'm looking for. We need to rework all these songs. So Johnny did a lot of the lyric writing. And for me, I didn't care. I mean, all that matters is the song. All that matters is the end product. And I'm the one who has to sing the songs and introduce them to the world anyway. So it doesn't really matter who's writing them down. I'm the one who has to bring them to life. And I always feel for guys like Geddy Lee, when I'm sure he's getting these crazy, post-apocalyptic lyrics from Neil Peart. Like, what the hell are you talking
about? Yeah, right.
How am I supposed to sing these? It's not quite as crazy with the Judas record, but still, I have to figure out where is this dark place that these lyrics are coming from, and how can I incorporate that into my experiences, internalize them, and make them my own. So there's a lot. Singing is a lot more than just standing in front of a microphone and shouting at the top of your lungs. There's a lot of intricacies to it. There's a lot of you have to sell it. You have to believe it. You have to commit to it. So that's kind of what we did, and I think it really worked out. And at the end of the day, whether I wrote all the songs or 3 of them like I have on this record, it doesn't matter, because they're my songs to sing. They're my songs to introduce to the world. And it's paid off. Like I said, this is the best record we've ever had. The biggest success, Judas Through the Roof, Painless following it. So it was a good decision.
You know, it really has paid off for you, Chris. What you've done personally is pretty phenomenal. I mean, you obviously conquered the pro wrestling world. You're conquering the rock and roll world. It's kind of two lifestyles that sort of seem similar from the outside looking in. Would you say that they're similar? And what about that lifestyle is attractive to you?
Well, yeah, very similar. And when I was a kid, I wanted to be in a rock and roll band and I wanted to be a wrestler. I enjoyed the showmanship of both and the character and the charisma of a great rocker. Man, and of a great wrestler, a guy who could really connect with the crowd. And that's what show business is, whether it's wrestling or music or stand-up comedy, or if you're a Shakespearean actor or whatever it may be. When you're performing live, you have to connect with the crowd. If you can connect with the crowd, they'll always come back and come see you, and always have a great time at your show. And that's, like I said, that's the similarities. Rock and roll and wrestling, both very high energy forms of entertainment, lots of aggression, lots of attitude. And also, the show depends on what kind of a reaction you're getting from the crowd, what kind of energy they're giving you. And that's my job, if the energy level is low, to bring it up and make sure that, like I said, everybody's involved and everybody's having a fun time. And it's a concept I learned from the great rock and roll frontman of Paul Stanley and Freddie Mercury and Bruce Dickinson and those type of guys, David Lee Roth. I incorporated that into my wrestling character 20 years ago. And we started Fozzy, took those characteristics that I was using in wrestling and bring them back into the rock and roll world. So Like I said, the secret is connecting with the crowd. And if you can do that, you'll always have a great fan base.
I assume you must get the most massive rush when you're on stage or when you're in the ring. Is that rush between the two, is it similar? Is it different? Like, in what ways would you say?
No, I mean, when you perform in front of a live audience, you get the instant gratification of, you know, knowing right away if people like something or don't like something. I think if you're making a movie or something along those lines, you have to wait 6 months to see if people enjoy, you know, what you're doing. Whereas when it's live, if you say something funny, people laugh. If you ask for them to scream, they scream. Everything in between. So you get all of that sort of feeling when you're performing in front of that live audience.
Wow, no, that's really cool hearing that. So, Chris, we got to talk about your match in Japan with Kenny Omega. So, Jimbo and I just want to know, how rewarding was that match for you? Because, you know, as we know in pro wrestling, sometimes a match gaining such universal praise is so rare. So just from your perspective, how was that whole experience?
Yeah, it was just, it was kind of a once in a lifetime thing. It was the right place at the right time for that match. The thing that intrigued me the most is you have a guy who's one of the top stars in the whole country of Japan. That's from Winnipeg, Manitoba, which is where I'm from. So, I mean, it was that was kind of really what intrigued me the most. It was almost like a Mayweather-McGregor type of vibe of a match that nobody thought was going to happen. And then when it happened, everyone was really, really surprised and excited, and et cetera, et cetera. So, and me included. And like I said, that's why I wanted to do it, because I knew that it might never be able to happen, you know, next month or next year. It wouldn't have been able to happen last year. So, like I said, it was a real kind of very cool moment. It was a big surprise for wrestling fans worldwide, and it was a big success. I mean, it made millions of dollars for everyone involved, and that's all you can ask for. You made sure everybody had a great time, had a great experience, and everyone made some money, and that's all that matters.
This might be a stupid idiot question, but in looking back at you tangling with Kenny Omega, I remember when I think that was all starting to germinate when we were up at Aftershock, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. The stuff on social media, like incorporating that, was that the plan right from the jump? Was that to get the buzz going for something that you already knew was going to happen?
Yeah, that was always my idea, was to do it that way. Because that's the modern way of doing things now. You know, I mean, this morning when I woke up late and missed my flight, I'm like, I need to contact Baby Huey. I don't have his phone number. Okay, I'll just DM him on Twitter. That's the new now. It's like you just find somebody on Twitter and talk to him on there. And so that's what I wanted to do, to kind of start the buzz for this, where people are like, what's Jericho talking about? Why is he arguing with Kenny Omega? You know, why is he doing this? Planting seeds, you know, just planting seeds to where when it finally happened and the surprise video aired in Osaka of me challenging Kenny, people were like, oh, we get it now. That's why they were doing this Twitter war. Up until then, nobody knew. And I've really prided myself for years in keeping things kind of on the down low. No one really knows what I'm doing and what I'm going to be doing, what my plans are. And I like it that way because it's much more fun. It's much more of a shock, much more of a surprise. It's kind of, I think, one of the reasons why I'm still very relevant in this day and age, is because I'm really good at keeping people on their toes and keeping people excited about what Jericho is going to be doing next.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and you're great at adapting to the times and whatever, you know, you have available to you. So kudos to you for that. I got to put you on the spot here, though. You know, one of the questions that goes around the radio station here is your Mount Rushmores of things. So I'm going to put you on the spot. If you have a Mount Rushmore of rock and roll, who's on it? And if you have a Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling, who's on it?
For bands or for individual musicians?
However you want to do it.
I'll do bands because it's easier that way. And
yeah.
My top four bands, actually, I'll add an extra face and make it five. It's the Beatles, Iron Maiden, Metallica, Kiss, and AC/DC. Those are my five favorite bands.
Very nice.
For wrestlers, I mean, I don't know, man. It's hard to say. Like, I'll give you my favorite. They might not be the best ever, but when I was a kid, it was Shawn Michaels, Owen Hart, Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, and Hulk Hogan. So that's Chris Jericho's Mount Rushmore at 16 years old.
I asked you that specifically because I knew you would put the Heartbreak Kid on there, and so that's awesome. Thank you very much, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There you go.
Well, Chris, we know you have limited time. We know you're traveling and all that. So we have one more question for you. We always like to wrap our interviews with this. We ask every rock star we've ever talked to the same question. Are you familiar with the movie Almost Famous?
Yes.
Okay. So in the last frame of that film, the question is asked from the reporter, what do you love about music? So Chris Jericho, what do you love about music?
Just the energy and the vibe and the passion that it gives me. I mean, I love rock and roll, man. I really do. And I love playing it, and I love singing it, and I love listening to it. And I just think just the feeling it gives you. I mean, music is a time machine. You know, you can listen to a great song that you heard when you were, you know, a kid, and it brings you back to that time frame. You know, and that's what I love about it, is that, you know, you can hear something and maybe you haven't heard it for 15 years, but when you hear it, it brings you right back to that time of your life when you first were getting into it. And I think that's one cool thing about Fozzy, is that we've been doing this for a long time. And even when we do, you know, the majority of our set are newer songs, but when we play a song like Enemy, if you're a longtime Fozzy fan, I mean, that song is almost 15 years old now. Yeah. So there's people that, you know, grew up with that tune. There's people that were in, you know, high school when they first heard it, or, you know, whatever it may be. And I love that about it. We love playing live, and the energy that we have to see people smiling when they listen to our songs and enjoying the tunes that we're playing for them. It just, when people are singing the lyrics for your song, there's nothing better than that. Cause that's, you know, people are learning these songs and living their lives to the music of Fozzy. And that's an honor for us. And it's also, a really cool feeling to know that you're giving people some fun, some enjoyment, and something to, I'm not gonna say something to live for, cause that's a little bit over the top, but something to look forward to. Like, Fozzy's coming to town. Fozzy's coming to San Francisco. We can't wait. There's people that will be there tonight that have been waiting to see us for years, or maybe have never seen us before. Mm-hmm. And I know that feeling, because I still have it when I go to a concert, when I'm excited to see a band. So, you know, it's the circle of rock just continues on, and that's a pretty cool place to be, for sure.
That's very cool.
Fantastic answer.
I love that.
That is the Twitter tweet of the day, or the quote of the day. Chris Jericho, music is a time machine.
Absolutely.
I love that concept.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, listen, thank you so much for making the time today. We really appreciate it. So first off, encourage all of our listeners, go to Slim's tonight. See Fozzy Through Fire, Santa Cruz, and Dark Sky Choir. It's all tonight, Slim's. It's part of the Judas Rising Tour 2018. Get your tickets now at slimspresents.com. Of course, get Fozzy's latest album, Judas, featuring the title track. It's Bad As Judas and also Painless, and we'll have those videos up at 1077thebone.com. And of course, Chris, you're just such a busy guy. You got Talk Is Jericho, your awesome podcast, you got your book, Knows a Four-Letter Word, and also you got Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea. For more info on that, just go to chrisjerichocruise.com. And of course, season 2 of But I'm Chris Jericho, that's out now. Just go to butimchrisjericho.com. So Chris, listen, thank you so much making the time today. If you couldn't tell already, we're just super fans of you, and we look forward to a headbang tonight at Slim's.
And it's going to be a great time. And like I said, we don't have giant dragons flying from the ceilings and pyro. We are the show. We're Van Halen in 1979. We make sure that everybody has a great time, and we're excited. We've had some great shows in San Francisco. Like you mentioned, we were just up in Sacramento. I know it's not close, but Northern California is a great rock and roll area. It's a great Fozzy area. It's going to be a killer show tonight, for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Chris, and we'll see you tonight.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Bye-bye.